It is 1980. President Jimmy Carter has just bailed out Chrysler Corporation with a $1.5 billion loan.
Let's go.
That's 1980.
Will not be the last time.
It's not the last time, right?
No,
I mean, $1.5 billion bailout for Chrysler.
I mean, Chrysler gets bailed out every like 20 years.
They literally do.
It's time for another one, honestly.
Yeah.
How
much is that? 1.9, you said?
$1.5 billion in 1980.
Okay,
money.
Let's see.
So that's what?
Probably
triple now?
Let's see.
Pretty much.
Probably close to 10. While we figure that out, Pink Floyd's The Wall is number one in the charts.
Hell yeah.
Fantastic album.
Yep.
Yeah.
Would you say it's better than Dark Side or not?
I think Dark Side's a joke, if I'm being honest.
Really?
Honestly, my favorite is...
My music man thinks that Dark Side is a joke.
Piper's at the Gate of Dawn.
Yeah, well, you're a...
You want real Floyd?
But Wish You Were Here? Come on.
Listen
Shine
to
On You Crazy Diamond.
Okay.
Welcome to the Machine. Anyway...
Sure.
The Winter Olympics takes place in Lake Placid, New York, where the U.S. hockey team defeats the commies 4-3, not even to win the gold medal, just to defeat communism.
Just defeat communism.
Yeah. Like, nobody even talks about the gold medal game where I think they versed Sweden or something.
Yeah.
$3.7 billion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Which today, I mean, like, meh. We spend money on stupid nonsense daily. So
yeah, I mean, I'm dropping like $3 like every
and
2 years.
And it's not like anybody wants to drive a Chrysler, so it's okay. I mean,
that's very
that's true too.
Yeah, nobody even talks about the gold medal game where I think we had to defeat like the Germans or something.
Yeah,
or the Swedes.
Well, we beat the Russians and we think that we win the gold from that, but we got to beat the Swedes after the Russians.
Yeah, like we had to get through another team.
Because that probably
I don't even know what
the
team
gold game.
Yeah, that's
it was
fair.
The one that everybody watched.
Yeah, well, it was a semifinal.
Didn't one of those teams get like their gold medal stolen?
I don't know about
or
that.
Or was that a different?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
My favorite thing about that team though is that like none of them they weren't pros, right?
No,
cuz the NHL didn't let them play.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you watch
but all the Russians were pros.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And on steroids.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
If you watch Miracle, it shows like where they are now today. Most of them are like insurance adjusters only one of them continued to actually play pro hockey and I don't think he even made nationals. It's just like it's really interesting. Mount St. Helens erupts in Washington State, killing 37 people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not
and
that
causing
much.
$3 billion in damage.
Yikes.
This is an interesting one that you have in our show notes. Ian Curtis of Joy Division kills himself.
Uh-huh.
And out of that, we get the greatest new wave band, one of the greatest new wave bands of all
I'll
time.
I'll agree with you on that one.
New Order.
Yes.
It's good.
And of course, Empire Strikes Back is released to theater, the best movie in the franchise. You say arguably, but it is the best movie in the franchise.
I say arguably because I don't know everyone else's opinion.
Well, I like A New Hope. But
I like A New Hope too.
Empire is a better movie.
As long as you're not saying Return of the Jedi is your favorite.
Why not?
I really don't care.
Empire is a better movie.
It's just not as good. I mean,
I just
like
A New Hope. And of course, the greatest team ever assembled, the New York Islanders, win their first Stanley Cup over the Philadelphia Flyers.
Nice.
First of four.
Yeah,
the greatest team of all time. Do we have an applause?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Greatest team of all time, the 80s Islanders, all the way. They're going to win the cup again this year. This is their year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Like every year before
yes,
that?
Yes, just like every year for the past
You said the
20.
Same thing last year.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And they didn't even make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think they got to pick up a hot new free agent. He's very recently free. His name is Shane Pinto.
Yeah.
He's my neighbor. just had a big gambling issue. Got kicked off the Senators
for 46 games.
So yeah, he's suspended for 46 games. I think the Isles should pick him up.
Just half this season.
He lives
he can't play
right
February.
Down the block from UBS.
He can't play until February.
Jeez.
I think he's going to do a great job on the Islanders, yeah.
Yeah, well what the Islanders need are more centers.
Absolutely. Third string
third
centers.
Center.
Well,
cuz they have like well
team?
What did you say?
Was he betting on his own team?
Supposedly no, but...
It's undisclosed.
I don't know. It's undisclosed. I don't know. He's my neighbor. You'd think he'd like talk to me, but he thinks I'm weird.
Well, you are.
Well,
but that's okay.
That's fine.
Well, I wouldn't talk to you
play some
either.
Street hockey. I'll come out and be like...
He's broken plenty of my windows.
Oh.
Anyway, arcades. This is not the Islanders podcast or the Ottawa Senators podcast. That's coming from the Arcade Age podcast, the Ottawa Senators podcast. among all of this chaos, amidst all of this chaos, the arcade is catching on like wildfire in America, pop culture. And we have with that some of the first urban legends, some of the first sort of myths and things that pop up around the arcade entering the pop culture, and some of the first video game related deaths.
Enter the Dragon?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Was there ever a video game based on Enter the Dragon?
No.
Must have been.
Right? Really?
No, but I feel like there should have been.
Yeah. I feel like there should have been a terrible
the Bruce Lee story or whatever for the Jaguar.
Really? Oh, well, that explains.
There's an NES, or is that Jaguar. Jackie Chan? There's like Jackie Chan Adventures.
Oh, yeah,
on
there
NES.
Is. Oh, no, there's a Jackie Chan fighting
but,
game.
But a Bruce Lee game, there's one for the Jaguar.
Okay. That's probably the greatest game of all time. We got to get a Jaguar and test it out.
Sorry to steer us off direction there. Continue.
No, it's fine. That's this podcast is getting steered off in different directions.
This is true.
Designed by Alan McNeil over at Stern Electronics in Chicago, Berserk.
Ooh.
One of my favorites. First arcade video game with speech synthesis. And it's said that it has a 30-word vocabulary, which apparently cost $1,000 a word to produce.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yikes. Using what's called linear predictive coding, which I don't know what that is.
Yeah, me either.
I love the way the robot speaks.
Jake,
though.
There's
it's
no
perfect.
One is
the linear speaking.
You're my audio guy.
So yeah. I can read the description that you put in the show notes. That would make no sense to me.
Well, it also maybe made it no sense to me when I put in the show notes. Okay. So please,
so
go
this
ahead.
Is good. So maybe some of us will be able to figure this out. So linear predictive coding is a method used in audio signal processing for representing the spectral envelope of a digital signal of speech in compressed form using the information of a linear predictive model. So, Jake, take it away. What does that mean?
Okay, so let me tell you. Wait, hold on. Let me adjust.
Well, first you got to unfold your WinRAR raw file.
So first, I think that the way that the computer is, you know, taking in all this information is I think that it kind of puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like us. And, you know, he just gets a nice heart-to-heart with the CPU, and he asks how it's feeling that day, and then he sends in Dr. Otto or whatever his name is.
Okay, that's very deep. Thank you for explaining.
Dr. Octavius.
In that way, yes. I think that clears it up for everybody.
I think so too. Yeah,
this actually makes perfect sense.
Thanks,
now.
Right
now, I
of course
all makes sense.
Okay. I think we should do it ourselves.
Problem. Wait, hold on. No problem, everybody. Thank you.
That was a round of applause.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to guess. Jake is the only one with headphones on, so he's the only one who can hear the audio samples that he's playing.
Now you got everybody's laughing at you, Chris.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. I mean, fair. So the synthesized speech is that the robots talk to you. Evil Otto, who is the evil boss of the robots.
Smiley.
Yeah, the smiling little bouncing ball, also talks to you and taunts you. Both when it's in attract mode, which is pretty cool, and then also while you're playing. And it says all kinds of different things. And Evil Otto is actually unkillable, which is fun.
Yeah, you got to avoid him.
Yeah, you just have to avoid him and leave whenever he shows up. The robots you can kill, you have like a little blaster that you shoot out. And then there's electrified maze walls that you have to dodge.
Yes.
The whole plot, I think, of the game, if I remember, is that you crash land on some like alien planet and get put in this like alien maze prison, and all the aliens are robots, and you have to find your way out through this like alien maze with all the robots.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Exactly. Yeah. Mr. Otto.
Roboto. Mr. Otto, yes.
Yeah.
The secret, of course, is that there is no ending to the game. You cannot win.
Like all of our favorite arcade games.
Yeah, like most arcade games. There's no win condition. You never make it out of the maze. You just...
Endless.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, have you tried?
I haven't. People better at the game than I have, I would guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's a story of some guy playing it at a gas station in Florida for 3 days straight
on a bunch of
right,
crap.
On the Netflix documentaries.
Right, yes.
It's always in Florida. Continue.
Yeah. Go. Well, that was the Galaga story, right? Where he set the record for Galaga in a gas station.
Galaga.
Yeah.
In a gas station in Florida. On
now,
like
when you do that,
36
though, like,
hours.
How do you go to the bathroom? Do you go to the bathroom? Just hold it.
You have a soda bottle.
Yeah, we've discussed it. What happens is you get enough extra lives that then you just
Just let yourself die and relieve yourself and come back.
Yeah. Mm. And if you're that good, you don't care about, you know, you can do it on like two lives or whatever.
This is true.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. We should look up what the high score record for Berserk is, because I would be curious to see that. So Evil Otto is apparently based... I love it when video games do this, when they... it's just the programmer who just hates this one person in particular and is like, I'm going to immortalize him by making him the worst person in my video game. Mm-hmm. He's based on this guy, Dave Otto, who was the security guard at McNeil's. McNeil's former employer, Nutting Associates. And Otto would apparently smile while he's yelling at people and lock employees out of the building and just like mess with people. And he would be smiling while he was doing it the whole time. So
I kind of like this guy, Otto.
Yeah, it sounds like he was having fun at work.
He sounds like a good employer.
He just sounds like an even sassier Jim McKenna.
But so McNeil is based on, or McNeil based Evil Otto on this guy, Dave Otto, where he's just smiling as he tracks you down, taunts you, and then kills you. It's a great game. It consists of 65,536 rooms and around 1,020 maze layouts. Now, that sounds like it ends, but I'm guessing it just crashes if you hit 65,536.
I would assume it just crashes.
Because that sounds like a hex number, so it probably just crashes. Like,
I must say, though, I do enjoy the voices of the robots, right?
That's my favorite part.
Robots and Otto, yeah.
Star Wars Battlefront, especially the first two that came out on the PlayStation 2, it was nearly identical to Berserk. And it's nice because, like, it keeps them sounding robotic, but now if you play the newer Star Wars games, they make them sound more human-like, and they actually have more phrases, and they don't really have like that robotic voice, and it takes away from it.
But. Oh, I love that classic like computer robot sound.
Yeah, where you can clearly tell it's a robot.
Like War Games, that's the classic one, right? Mm-hmm. The Shall We Play a Game? Or I just recently watched it. It's not a fantastic movie, but Colossus, the Forbin Project. It's this movie.
Sounds a little familiar. Older one, right?
Yeah, it's 71, maybe.
Yeah, that does sound familiar. I haven't seen it, though.
Classic sci-fi plot where some guy, like the Terminator, basically, where they make a computer that'll run our nuclear weapons, and then the computer kind of goes rogue. Decides that, you know, to save us, it really needs to take complete control over human society, basically. But the computer talks in like that voice.
How do they take care of it at the end? Did they just throw a bucket of water on it?
No, I don't remember the ending. I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but I don't remember the ending, but I think they just lose.
Oh.
And like it just ends where it's like, yep, that's it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think like it has that, a happy ending. Usually the humans like win at the end, but if they lose, it's a nice little twist. Interesting. Yeah.
So, pretty good movie. And again, it has like look up on YouTube like the speech where the computer makes. It's just great.
Nice.
It has that like classic robot voice. But some of the words or phrases that Berserk will say, intruder alert when Evil Otto appears.
Mm.
My favorite is the humanoid must not escape, or chicken fight like a robot, which is great. Got the humanoid, got the intruder is when you die. And then just other stuff like kill the chicken and stuff like that. Yeah, the chicken fight like a robot as if you leave without killing all the robots on the screen.
Can we pull up a YouTube video of the sound clips?
Yeah,
isn't that when he tells you to fight like a robot?
Yeah, he says fight
like
a robot.
Yes,
thank you.
Robots in disguise.
Robots in disguise.
And if we can, Seamus, after we pull up the audio of this, can we pull up the audio of the clones? No, not the clones. What is it?
Oh, the droids.
The droids in Star Wars. I always get them mixed up. As you can tell, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan. I like Star Wars. I just don't have the time.
So if we go through, and the reason we're talking about Berserk is not because it's a fantastic game, but because Berserk is one of the first games that kind of gets this urban legend status to it. And the urban legend status is that if you play the game, you die. And it kind of makes sense because it's kind of like a dark game. It just looks very dark, literally, because it's a black bordered screen or black background. But, you know, it's also kind of bleak and there's no escape from this maze or whatever. But the stories start pretty early. And the legend goes, or the story, is that Berserk is responsible for killing three people at Friar Tuck's game room in Calumet City, Illinois. The first death, which is probably more likely an urban legend than anything else, it goes that this guy named Jeff Daly enters his initial twice on the top 10 leaderboard in the game, next to his score of 16,660. What do you get when you remove the zero?
And the one.
And the one.
Yeah, it's 666.
The mark of the beast, exactly.
You know, Maiden? Yeah. Maiden showing up?
After doing that, he has a heart attack and dies.
Oh, no, I think he was just playing too much games.
Well, that's probably
too much Mountain Dew.
I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say this guy wasn't physically in the best condition of his life, but, you know, these things happen.
A little too many hot dogs here and there.
Yeah.
So the second death.
Too much donkeys.
Actually does happen. So this is where we probably get into the... I know one of the things, this was a person with a heart condition, is well documented, and you can find the Chicago Tribune article, which we'll talk about in a second. 1982, April 27th, is that of Peter Burkowski. So do you want to talk about that one, or should I... keep reading.
Can we pull up the audio first? While
yeah,
we're on
we
Berserk?
Can also do that.
Yeah, we can pull up some audio. See if this has got.
It's hard to find just the sound.
Yeah,
like, that's the gameplay.
So
yeah.
This is just. Oh boy.
Oh boy.
No.
This is just a regular like playthrough, which will have it, I guess. But. The sound effects are also great.
Oh, that's
humanoid.
Pretty cool.
Fun.
I just love the sound effects of this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just so like...
that classic, like...
Yeah, they're very Atari.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So ridiculous.
There's Otto.
Yeah, Evil Otto has like a different voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This was Star Wars.
Roger, Roger. Yeah.
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 So, Roger, Roger.
I got the article Chris was referring to, Chicago Tribune, 1982. So, just going to read a bit of it here. An 18-year-old South Holland youth died of a heart attack while playing a video game in Calumet City, the Lake County, Indiana coroner ruled on Monday. The reason why Indiana coroner rules about it is because the game room is 10 minutes from the border of Indiana. So that was the hospital that responded to the Friar Tuck's game room to take him to St. Margaret's Hospital right over the border in Indiana. So Deputy Lake County Coroner Mark Allen said the possibility that Peter Bukowski died earlier this month as a direct result of stress caused by the game was investigated. But we don't want to say whether or not yes or no whether the video game represents enough exertion to have brought on the attack. Dr. Robert Elliott of the University of Nebraska released a study this month saying video games can be hazardous to people who may be susceptible to heart disease. Allen is going to forward the autopsy results to Elliott for comparison with Elliott's test results. The official cause of Bukowski's death is a heart attack brought on by a myocardial inflammation. He collapsed April 3rd at the Friar Tuck game room in River Oaks Shopping Center and was pronounced dead at St. Margaret's Hospital in Hammond. Allen said the inflammation, a scarring of the heart tissue, was something Bukowski would have had prior to playing the game. Coroner's office investigators inspected the Berserk game that Bukowski had been playing but found no electronic defects. Bukowski had no history of heart trouble, and Allen compared the case to others in which high school athletes had died for similar reasons. Allen said the heart attack could have been caused by any type of exertion, like hiking up a flight of stairs or running from first to second base. Mark Allen, the coroner, also said that we certainly don't want to scare people away from video games. Peter could have died in a number of stressful situations. We once had a boy who had a heart attack while studying for an exam. It just happened he died in front of a video game, but it's also quite interesting. So here's the coroner quoted as that, and like he's just like leaving everything open at that, you know, like he's leaving it open that like he's really leaving it open-ended for this urban legend, this urban myth to kind of like, you know, take hold and you know, take grip. So it's interesting that he does that. So McNeil is interviewed later on, the designer of the game, and he says that about the, he refutes a claim of Daly dying, Jeff Daly dying, but he does kind of talk about Bukowski dying, saying the unfortunate fellow was obese and had run upstairs to play the game. Alan explains, the legend, again, he's just referring to the urban legend, is he set a high score and died, but the owner of the arcade said he didn't finish the game. He was out of breath from the moment he arrived until he dropped. The legend is way better than reality. So he's just talking about like the urban legend. The excitement of playing a game, killing a player after setting a high score. So again, he's just referring to the legend. So that kind of plays into the Jeff Daly first death with Berserk, the urban legend. But if it was fact, if the first guy, Jeff Daly, had died, then obviously that would have been included in a Chicago Tribune article. You know, obviously that would have been included in an article. Now, the third supposed death is definitely more urban legend than fact. So apparently the third Berserk death takes place at, you guys probably already know where it takes place, which is Friar Tuck's game room. Again.
Yeah, why is Friar Tuck's game room like so the scariest place in America?
So all urban legends kind of start in this same place. Yeah.
It's interesting.
And then it's a big game of telephone. They just kind of keep going.
Yeah, they keep just evolving.
So it happens at Friar Tuck's game room 6 years later in 1988. Now, I remember growing up and hearing this story. Okay. So one arcade player supposedly stabbed another one to death in a fight that started over whose quarter for the next game was inserted into the Berserk cabinet.
Okay.
There's nothing to document this ever happened, but it's interesting to see how an urban legend grows and takes off over time, obviously, before there was an actual internet, before we actually have an internet, you know? Mm-hmm. When people had to actually read newspapers and books and had to try to rely on reliable sources, but...
Well, or when you just heard it on the playground.
You just heard it on the playground, and it's just
from somebody's cousin who told you.
It's this giant game of telephone that I heard it at the playground in the arcade or whatever, right? When I was a child. But that's now a story that's come from Illinois.
Yeah.
All the way to Long Island. You know,
so halfway across the country from playgrounds.
Hundreds and thousands of children had to pass that along for it to get to me in 1988, 1989.
Now, would you say that would boost the playtime of Berserk, or would that hinder it, in your opinion?
So, here's the thing. Actually, it's interesting you brought that up. So, I never found a Berserk cabinet when I was young. I never had a Berserk cabinet in my arcade, so I never played the game.
Yeah.
So, adding to the urban legend of Berserk deaths was the fact that Berserk cabinets were a little tough to come by in certain markets due to a shortage because...
Is it like distribution?
So Stern had suffered a very large cancellation of over 4,000 cabinets on order.
Okay.
Because the game's original 8-way optical joystick was a complete failure.
They were just shit the bed all
the
time?
The optical joystick just failed.
Yeah.
And it had to be replaced at CERN's expense with a Wico Leaf joystick.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Arcade owners talk, of course. And like I said, over 4,000, I believe it was like 4,200 new Berserk owners canceled their orders, like new arcade owners. Right. So that left a shortage in certain markets. So I didn't see this game.
So this definitely screwed them.
Right, but I also knew if I did see the game,
you would play
at that age, I wasn't playing it because I was going to freaking die.
So you're going
to
die.
You know, so it definitely adds to the mystery and the mystique of the game
Yeah, because it's hard to find. So
it's a shame because it's kind of hard to find.
You don't see it at your normal arcade, and then maybe you go somewhere else. You're like, oh, there it is.
It's a shame because it's a very good game. And also, I mean, like, for a monitor that's not a vector, you would mistake it for a vector.
Oh, yeah, it's a crispy monitor.
It's very crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I like all the colors and stuff, too. Every different
with the black drop, it makes colors. The colors pop. It's nice.
It almost looks like neon.
Yeah. I mean, everything about Berserk, including the, you know, the one confirmed death around it,
right,
all loans itself to becoming this giant, you know, urban legend. It's it's a perfect candidate for people and kids and teenagers to talk, you know, this craziness around the game.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? It's also just the perfect game. Like, even if all of, well, I guess we did talk about it, Pac-Man had, what, the same amount of murders associated with it as Berserk?
It had one murder going on.
Pac-Man had some weird stuff.
I thought there was another one.
I don't know. We talked about Pac-Man.
Okay. Well, Tetris, I know, had a couple
weird things. Yeah, and Tetris. But, like, there's no urban legend where it's like, if you play Pac-Man, you know, you go out and murder people.
Yeah.
Because, like, it just doesn't work the same. Yeah. Same
now,
with, like, Tetris.
As a game, as it's just standalone game, Berserk receives really good positive reviews. Now it's considered one of the greatest, you know, golden age arcade games of all time. So 2 years later, Stern releases the sequel Frenzy. It's also developed by Alan McNeil. There's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of differences.
I've never played.
Well, in the Berserk cabinet that we built and that Jake finished up several months ago, our board set is a Berserk Frenzy. So you can switch into a Frenzy if you want, or you can.
It has a different version of Berserk.
It is.
Well, no, it has two versions of Berserk.
Yes.
What's the other version? Is that a modern hack?
Or I think it's just a modern.
I think it's just a modern hack. I mean, from what I remember, it had three games on that board.
Yeah.
You had normal Berserk, Berserk Frenzy, and then like Berserk Ultra or something.
Yeah, or like 50. I feel like there was a number after it.
It could have been a number. Oh, well, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I never played that one. I always said it just.
I was just wondering if that was some kind of like second board set that they put out for it.
I don't believe so. Berserk is ported to the 2600, 5200.
2600 is a really good port.
And the Vectrex. The 5200 version is the only one with digitized speech.
Yes.
Frenzy was ported to only what I could find, the ColecoVision and the ZX Spectrum, and that's it. Berserk's influence in pop culture is everywhere, from music samples, television shows, and movies. Eugene Jarvis cites Berserk as a huge influence on Jake's favorite game of all time, Robotron 2084.
It's a great one.
So Jarvis says, like, he took a lot from Berserk.
I mean, it's very similar. It just, you know, a little bit more shooting and way more enemies.
At the time, there are plenty of Berserk clones. You know, we've always talked about clones, like ripoffs, whatever.
Yeah.
With one of them, being actually the greatest game for the Atari 8-bit computers ever made. It was the greatest game ever made for the Atari 8-bit computers and the Commodore 64.
Blackjack.
That game is Seamus.
Okay.
Is it really?
It's released in 1982. It's a flip-screen shooter action-adventure game programmed by Catherine Matega under the name William Matega and published by Synapse Software.
Is it spelled like your name?
No, it's spelled like the American way.
S-H-A-M-U-S.
It is actually credited for making Synapse famous because of the quality of the game. It's followed by the second greatest game ever made for the Atari 8-bit and Commodore 64, and that is Seamus Case 2.
Case 2.
So the two greatest games ever made for Atari 8-bit.
Bases over here.
I will show it to you now.
Yes, please. I want to see Seamus.
Theme song.
Oh, it's got a theme song?
No. Seamus for the Atari 800. It's the greatest game ever made for the Atari computers and the Commodore 64.
This game looks like shit.
Oh, I've heard this music before.
It's, that's Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Pretty good.
Dude, like I said, all the critics agree. It's the greatest game ever made for the Atari 800, the Atari 8-bit computers, and the Commodore 64. Yeah. Okay. So gameplay is for this game. It's inspired by Berserk.
It looks pretty basic.
With the player being a robot detective who must navigate a 128-room maze of electrified walls, which you've all heard before.
Sounds cool.
Going up against robotic enemies and trying to clear rooms before moving on, which is the same base.
Yeah, it's same Berserk. Shit as Berserk.
There you go.
So that is Berserk. Wow. It's the greatest. So you need to get one of these for your Atari. 800.
I mean, I was just looking it up. Like, this is kind of an expensive game.
Yeah.
Like,
because it's the greatest game ever made for the Atari.
Yeah. Wow. How much demand is there for Atari 800 games? Let's be honest here.
Well, we know there's none except for one in this room.
I mean, I
know
one.
Well, I mean, we literally know of only all of us literally know of only one, and that's you.
Yeah, I've never met a single other person that even has mentioned an Atari 800.
Game cartridge only is like $50.
That's kind of ridiculous. So. That's
I
not
probably
worth.
Will not be investing one in one anytime soon.
Yeah.
You can probably get James to do like some credit card deal for like $20.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, if anyone
who's carrying
that Atari 800 stuff,
dude, the only person who's gonna have that is maybe McWilliams.
It's gonna be
McWilliams,
probably. Yeah.
It's like, gonna be in some estates,
and then he's gonna like charge you like $50.
You know what to do? Bring a 12-pack of beer.
Just because it's you. Yeah. Bring a 12-pack, and McWilliams will bring that price down.
Probably like $45.
Yeah.
Be like, kid, for you?
Just add a pack of cigarettes on top of that. You're set.
Then it's 40.
Yeah. So it's like, we're going to go from
spending more.
Berserk, which is the game that kills, to the game that drives players crazy.
This is like one of my favorite stories.
So in 1981, a new arcade game starts test runs at several arcades in and around Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
The game became
the scariest place in America.
Basically, as popular as Pac-Man, excuse me,
as America.
With lines forming for hours at the machine, fights broke out over who was next to play the machine, and it was one of the most addictive games ever made. Players, though, suffered some weird side effects, including seizures, amnesia, insomnia, night terrors, and hallucinations. John Wrighton of Bethany, Oregon, said that he had witnessed three men in dark suits service the game one night at his local arcade, and they seemed to be collecting data numbers or something from the back of the machine. About roughly 4 or 5 weeks after its release, the game Polybius, which is what we're talking about, virtually disappears from arcade floors. No one could find anything on the game until very, very later. So apparently, Polybius was created and published by a government-funded software company called Cineslashen. The game is Cineslashen.
Oh.
The name is not real German, but derived from German, and basically means sense delete or sensory deprivation. That's what
Ooh,
it's supposed to be.
Interesting.
Polybius is the name. Polybius is also the software company.
Yeah, okay.
Polybius is also the name of a classical Greek historian from Arcadia, who is known for asserting that historians should never report what they cannot verify through interviews with eyewitnesses. So no one can find anything on this freaking game until about 1998, when an online article appears on coinop.org. And the author claims to have a ROM image file from the machine, and he also claims to have played it in 1981 at an arcade. The first mention of Polybius in print was September 2003 issue of Game Pro magazine in a piece titled Secrets and Lies, saying the game's existence was inconclusive, which only helped spread the legend of this game.
Yeah.
Right? But truth is, the game was a complete hoax.
Uh-huh.
A very clever and brilliant hoax, but none of the story actually ever happened.
I don't believe it. I think it's all real.
Someone does, however, go through trouble of, you know, making the game.
Yeah.
So
I've
really,
I've
you kind of
at arcades.
You kind of have to ask, how and why did the story of Polybius begin? So there are a few things going on at the same time in the arcade that, when blended together, give birth to this legend of Polybius. Right? So there were a couple of real news reports at the time that two arcade game players on the same day at the same arcade had taken seriously ill in Portland, Oregon in 1981. One had collapsed with a migraine headache after playing Tempest, and one had severe stomach pain after playing Asteroids for 28 hours in an attempt to break a world record.
Wow, I wonder why he's got a stomach ache.
Right, but both of these happened at the same arcade.
What, was the guy playing Tempest doing it for 30 hours too? Or
I mean, I love Tempest, but Tempest also can give me a migraine.
Yes.
Like Tempest is... Yeah.
Now listen to the rest of it's super fascinating because it has to do with Tempest.
Okay.
Now, second thing that goes on in and around Portland, Oregon at arcades is apparently about a week or two later, after these two instances of these two kids falling ill, is that the FBI started raiding arcades in the Portland, Oregon area because some owners were using arcade machines for gambling.
Okay.
So FBI agents would be going into arcades and checking on machines.
Okay.
Right? Apparently.
God damn.
Going through and checking on machines.
No, that was your email.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Right. So Brian Dunning of he does Skeptoid podcast. He's a pretty reputable guy. He does his research. He said that the two events were mashed up to create an urban legend that, you know, the shadowy government created an arcade game to test mind control techniques and gather information on young people. Like, that's kind of where it comes from.
I think that's what they did.
He also believes that the urban legend myth possibly gained so much ground in 1984, really, a few years afterwards, because he basically looks at it and says that the urban legend and myth of it basically influences the entire plot of the 1984 film The Last Starfighter, where a teenager is recruited by aliens who monitor him playing a covertly developed arcade game. Dunning also...
Which is a great movie.
Dunning also kind of says that the name Sinnerslauschen would be a name made up from a non-German speaker using like an English to German dictionary in order to combine two words to make an interesting German-sounding name.
Because it doesn't really sound...
You know?
Definitely is interesting. Yeah.
So as for people who claim to have claimed to actually play Polybius back in the day, they actually could have been having a bit of a memory problem, a memory gap or lapse and severe confusion over playing an actual game, which was a Laserdisc game released in 1983 by Semutrek. Called Cube Quest, which is a 3D polygon shoot 'em up that had been described upon its debut at AMOA show as being visually stunning, hallucinogenic, and neo-psychedelic.
Really?
The trouble with Cube Quest is that it was a Laserdisc. We've talked about Laserdisc before, right?
Yeah.
So the damn thing...
I think we've watched footage of this game. I remember saying the exact same thing. Right. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Trippy as hell.
Yeah.
So this one in particular... was always failing and needing constant visits by arcade repairmen. And also, it was always being pulled off the floor and disappearing from arcade floors quickly because of the maintenance issues. Therein, like, oh, Polybius disappeared so fast after its release. Because this game would disappear so fast after its release because it was failing all the time. Also, gameplay for Polybius has been described as similar to a Tempest-like shoot-em-up with surreal, often harmful visuals, and that Polybius cabinets were frequented by men in black before disappearing completely from the arcade floor. Again, Cube Quest is a Tempest-like game. Like
psychedelic Tempest, basically.
At the time, considered very advanced visuals, and due to that modern technology, which is not reliable at the time, the damn thing would... crap the bed all the time, and it would disappear from the arcade. Like, people wouldn't see it. So people might play it once, right? And then you go back to your local arcade in Portland, Oregon, or wherever, and be like, oh, you know, where is this? Where's this game? And people would be like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never played that game. I don't know what the hell this is. What are you even saying? So this is Cube Quest. So.
Yeah.
Dude, those are pretty crazy visuals for 1984.
Yeah, can we get this in the arcade
this game's ridiculous.
No, because, dude, this would be so hard to come across.
Well, and we'd have to run it in, like, our spaces.
And the cabinet is pretty bulky and crazy looking. And, yeah, we'd have to probably run it in the Space Ace or Dragon's Lair cabinet. And,
yeah.
Mod it and hack it.
Yeah, I mean that's that. I mean that's if you want to do the Laserdisc route. I mean,
right.
I'm sure you get some sort of.
I think we could probably focus on the Daphne that we have in our Dragon's Lair cabinet. We could probably load.
Yeah, that's
what I was gonna say. We
right.
Should just load it onto the hard drive.
So let's fast forward to 2007, and software company Rogue Synapse publishes a free downloadable game named Polybius for Windows on the website. Sinderschlauschen.com.
So this is what I've heard of with the Polybius thing, which is interesting that it's like the same story, but it gets translated as time goes on, right? Because I'm not really old enough to have been to arcades and heard about this, but I remember hearing that there was this game that you would download on your computer, and when you downloaded it, like you could play it like once, and then it would delete itself.
That was this.
From, and you could never play it again. Right. And it was like super crazy and like it would mess with your brain or something like that. But I remember hearing about that.
So Rogue Synapse.
Which I guess technically that's a real thing.
Designs their Polybius after a description of gameplay posted on a forum by a guy named Stephen Roach, who claims to have worked on the original Polybius back in 1980. Rogue Synapse, of course, went as far as creating another company and naming it Sinderschlauschen, and then transferring it to the Rogue Synapse trademark. Then they also went ahead in 2007, 2008 and trademarked Polybius.
Okay.
So they're smart. They know this is an urban legend, it's a myth, or whatever else like that. They're just trying to perpetuate the hell out of this now in the massive digital age of the internet, right?
A hard game to look at.
So it just...
Yeah.
But now
you can see why from playing this, people would get migraines and like weird like effect. And if you were prone to seizures, you would probably get a seizure.
And you're standing directly in front of the monitor.
This is Cube Quest. So Polybius is now an actual game because people have made them.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can get one where I believe it's a vector.
Were you talking about making a Polybius?
Yeah. So I would like to make one.
You should also get the movie to go alongside with it.
That too.
Can you pull up Polybius?
I can pull up. I can pull up gameplay of a Polybius that I would like us to try to build.
Yeah, like I said, it's just interesting that I mean, people have made games. They've made cabinets for it, so it's almost real.
That's 10 years ago. That's 11 years ago. I want to go to.
Oh, Polybius is real proof.
Yeah. So this is the one so that if you play it now, that's kind of what it is. So someone builds it, you know, and then they start putting it in, you know, hacked.
That game looks
modded cabinets.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. So this is actually... This game, I believe, this one's on a board set. See, it's vector-based?
Okay, yeah.
So this is someone's interpretation of Polybius. But this is the one, like, this is a board set you can actually buy online, and you can populate it into, I believe, an existing Asteroids or Asteroids Deluxe cabinet.
Okay.
And you could turn into your own Polybius.
Now, I'm sure people have made these, but have people made, like, prefabbed, pre-built Polybius machines that you can go? No. Okay.
I don't think anyone's doing that. I don't think there's the desire for it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that big of a deal that people are going to seek it out. I think it's that big of a deal if you're a collector that you build one, you're going to make your own, you know? Yeah. There's graphics packages for it. Like I said, there's obviously a board set. It's not supposed to be that complicated. I think it's a fire button and a joystick, and that's really about
it. Well, go back to the search results here on YouTube. I want to see something. Because the first video, it almost looked like an... No, maybe not.
This is posted 11 years ago. So, yeah, this is the same one, I believe.
Okay.
Yep.
No, I thought there was, like, an ad for you to buy, like, one of the bar top ones or something, but I guess not. So.
So being an urban legend, this thing just catches fire.
Yeah.
You know, like it just goes everywhere. Everyone knows about it. So, interesting enough, Polybius is actually the like main thing for Nine Inch Nails song Less Than. So the whole video is people playing Polybius.
Okay. I just
or
love the
their version of Polybius, which is basically what we see, which is very much now this looks very much like CubeQuest.
Now, oh no, because right? We looked it up. Yeah. This is a very recent game.
Yeah.
Or very recent song. So they're playing one of the games that people
right.
made.
Because
I thought this was earlier.
We see Polybius make little guest appearances in TV shows like The Goldbergs and The Simpsons. And even recently, we see Polybius make a...
Jose, is this the movie you were talking about? There's a short film?
There's a short film, but there's also a longer one that came out last year, I think.
Oh, 2022.
Yeah.
A film about the game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
About the urban legend of the game or about the game?
2022 movie.
About the game.
Okay.
The little... Pull summary is crime thriller based on the mysterious Polybius arcade cabinet from the 80s. FBI agent Hudson must track down a serial killer in Florida with possible ties to a hidden government secret.
Yeah, I believe it's on Netflix for a good minute. It still might be on there.
Okay. There's also a YouTuber movie, if anyone's ever heard of Ashens.
Okay.
No.
He's like a British guy and he reviews stuff, but he's made a couple movies, but he made one called The Polybius Heist.
Yeah, I think that one's like 15, 20 minutes long or something.
No, it's a feature length.
Really?
Yeah, it's like hour 40. But yeah, he has to basically hunt down. It's like a heist movie where he has to hunt this down and find it for some collector or something like that. I've heard it. I haven't seen it, actually, but I've heard it's a good movie.
What's funny is with all these urban legends and stuff like that.
I think it's on... or it was.
I definitely remember, like, here when I was young, like I told you guys, like I said before earlier, I definitely remember, you know,
hearing all of this,
hearing about Berserk. Yeah. I don't remember hearing about Polybius.
Okay.
But I remember hearing about Berserk.
Okay.
That Berserk was the game that killed.
Well,
I don't recall Polybius at all ever. That's why I think really kind of the birth of the Polybius legend comes in 1998
with the
founding of the internet, yeah. Where this guy just throws this article up on CoinOp and says, hey, did you guys ever?
Yeah.
Because he's starting to make it up.
Right.
And with the internet, is a massive giant game of telephone, even bigger than... kids on the school on
right,
school playgrounds, right?
Than the playground.
The word of mouth on the internet is yeah. billions of people at a time. So it's certainly interesting that these urban legends kind of take hold, at least definitely in video game culture. But, you know, video game culture at that time, video games were the enemies. You know, it was the enemy. It was the one that was disrupting causing, you know, youth to go wild and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Right.
You know, it was, you know.
It was the youth rebellion.
Right. It was the youth rebellion of the early 80s was go to the arcade and play video games all night.
Yeah.
So it, as a subculture, it loans itself easily to having urban legends grow out of things that are certainly tragedies,
yeah.
of course,
but
then people just kind of keep
caused
going.
Caused by Berserk.
Right.
Or
right.
something like that.
Right. And like I said, you know, the coroner says, oh, well, it's just, you know, it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Why did you have to say it that way?
Right. Yeah.
Because then you just left it open for,
yeah.
you know, adults time to be like, oh, well, video games might kill my son or whatever. Right.
Yeah, it's a person with.
And these things just take off. So, you know, I just figured, you know, it's Halloween weekend.
Yeah.
Why not talk about
the
two deadliest games? They're actually not really the two deadliest games.
Right.
Nah, I still think Tetris has the worst, like, history of it. Where, like, the guy, like.
You think it's got the most bad luck associated with it?
Oh, yeah. Well, because who is the guy that, That like, the murder suicide where he like he killed his wife and kid and then killed himself.
We talked about that. I think Chris brought that up.
Yeah, because like Russia,
co-worker like, of Alexei Pajitnov.
Well, also Alexei Pajitnov's story is fascinating as hell. I mean, they just did a movie on him.
Yeah,
right?
He's not as you know, he didn't kill his wife and kid.
No, but I mean, you know, during the Cold War, he's at the height of the Cold War. And he, dude, he's the one who gets screwed the hardest out of all of that.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, by not only the Americans, but by his own, you know, communist cohorts in over there in the USSR.
See, but Tetris doesn't look scary. You play Berserk and you're like, this game is scary. Well, also, I believe it can kill me.
Like we said, we had that podcast.
Well, Tetris doesn't look scary until you get towards like the later levels. Yeah. Then you're just having
look, we had that podcast a long time ago where we brought up the whole story and we did all the research on the really kind of the first death associated with video game play, which was that guy shooting into the bar in, on Long Island over a game of Pac-Man.
For the Pac-Man, yeah.
And that was over Pac-Man.
Right, yeah.
Which is the friendliest game, most family-friendly game ever.
But again, nobody was going around saying, oh, Pac-Man, it'll kill you if you play it. I mean, some people were, but that's not an urban legend that we're still
talking. And I think also that Berserk, the gameplay, the synthesized speech, it loans itself to this.
Yeah.
That game's
it's very ominous. Yeah.
Right.
It's
ominous.
It's ominous. It's liminal. It's like, when you're playing it, if you're in like a dark room alone at night, you're it's hearing like the speeches. And
I don't know if I would play it, to be honest with you. Honestly.
Like, yeah. So
I don't know if I would.
Like, I've played it on like a, I have a little Atari flashback. So like I remember super late at night I'm playing it. There's no like voice to speech or like whatever.
Right. There's no
voice
to speech.
But when you kill, when you kill like all the robots and you're left in just like an empty maze room, it just feels weird.
Yeah. So, when again you're playing it, there's not much light from the monitor. Yeah. So there's not even that.
If this is me, I'd light a few candles, light up a cigarette.
Berserk originally.
The cabinet's also very dark, black and red, I think, and blue.
Well, here's the thing. That was later. Berserk originally was developed as a black and white game.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, McNeil conceived it as a black and white game. And the first few,
it would have been even cooler if it was
were black actually
and white,
black and white monitors that then they put, before ship, they put,
a color
overlay like the Space Invaders Deluxes.
Oh.
They did that with it. And then they said, no, like, by that time, Galaxian was already out and stuff like that.
When was this? Like
1980. Late 79, very early 80. But then Galaxian came out and they were like, well, we got
to
go color.
Color.
So then they went color. But apparently there are somewhere in the universe, there's a handful or more than a handful of actual black and white Berserk cabinets.
That just have a color overlay.
Interesting. Which is... I mean, now, imagine if you're playing that game in black and white in a dark room. I think it's even...
It's creepy.
Even creepier, like, you know? There's a psychology behind it. There's, like, this, like, psychosis behind it. Like, what Jake was saying, like, well, when I clear a room and I'm clear...
Yeah.
And I'm in a room by myself. I'm alone. In my own room by myself.
You're just alone in the dark.
Then my character's just kind of standing...
alone in the dark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah.
You know, you're alone in the dark twice.
Yeah,
so it definitely is easy pickings for an urban legend.
Oh, yeah.
I think that the urban legend of Polybius has always fascinated me. I think what's fascinating for me is how something like that gets started and how it gets pulled out of a couple of different things that are going on at the time.
Right.
But also then later, because... Cube Quest is a later game, 83, 84.
Right, yeah.
It's 2 years after the release of the supposed Polybius, right?
So people are
but because... Right.
20 years after the fact.
Oh, I played it once, and then I remember playing it, and then it disappeared from arcade floors, and you could never find them.
Well,
because it, it wasn't Polybius, but it was a game that failed constantly.
Yeah.
They didn't sell a whole lot of them, so it's uber rare, and then... You would always have people working on them.
Yeah.
So, you know, Men in Black coming to service machine.
Well, also the whole story of like, oh, the government made this game to like control people's minds. I mean, when was Atari's Battlezone that they sold to the military?
Right.
Right. So it's not, you know, it's taking a bunch of different things and putting them together, but it's not completely out of line that there would be a government contract and for a video game.
CubeQuest also doesn't get any help from people like Eugene Jarvis, because Eugene Jarvis even said upon its release of CubeQuest, he's like, oh, it's like kind of like a Tempest ripoff. You know, so he
exactly
says
what you
it,
don't want to say.
See, which like, is not what you want to say, yeah, but he does say that the colors and visuals are very, very psychedelic. So we have this psychedelic game now, mind control, visuals, seizures, the whole nine comes out of
You could
Cube
easily
Quest.
Get a migraine from playing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I still feel like it's way more like a psychedelic Gyrus than Tempest.
Right. I have never played the game.
Gyrus.
I've only watched the game
play. Well, yeah, watching that footage, it just, like, to
is
me.
Is Gyrus the lander one?
No, Gyrus that's Gravitar. Is, you're spinning in a circle and just shooting shit.
Oh.
Yeah, we have
No, Gyrus
one.
Is, well, we had.
No,
we
still have
it. We still have
Gravitar?
It? I thought
I was
we
thinking
had
of
we still have a Gyrus. I just haven't put it out in years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah, no, so...
So that's our Halloween episode.
That's our Halloween episode. Talking about all the scary stuff with video games.
Nice.
Very spoopy.
Indeed.
Spooky.
Go ahead and wrap it up.